We all have our pleasures. For some, it's harmless phosphorescence. Hello, everyone. This is Crispy Critter Throw Smiley, and I am joined this week by...
I'm Josh Cece, and a blue sun, come on.
I'm Brian Lesh, and Lady Luck's a bitch.
I'm Alaric Weber. They call me the Mistress of Pain.
I do anyways. And this is Harmless Phosphorescence. It's the podcast where we watch every theatrically released full-length live-action superhero movie ever made. We gather some research into the production and the source material, and we tell you all about it. And we are coming to you once again remotely. All four of us are in different locations. Hopefully, if you listened to last week's episode, you know it went a little rough. As far as the recording process goes, everybody, we do apologize for that. I think it's still a fun, listenable episode, but this week we're trying out slightly different technology, so hopefully this will work out a little bit better. This week, we are going to be watching The Crow, City of Angels.
People once believed that when someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes, the crow can bring that soul back to put the wrong things right. I thought that Eric was the last. I never imagined there would be another.
It's another time. It's another world. And another has been chosen.
Take your silver spoon, take your grave.
The Crow, City of Angels.
Yeah, we'll get to it, but yeah, this has got a real Gen X mentality.
Oh, yeah.
More than the first one, even.
Way more than the first one. This is The Crow, City of Angels. It was released August 30th, 1996, with a running time of 84 minutes. Lean and mean. Might be the shortest one we've done yet, not counting Superman and the Mole Men. It had a budget of It had a budget of $13 million, and it took in $17.9 million. And now, everybody, let us play the box office top 10 of the week. So,
okay,
fellas, for the week of August 30th, 1996, we are all, well, not me, but the three of you will all try to guess where Crow City of Angels opened up in the top 10. Josh, as always, we begin with you.
Okay, you know, the first one did really well, and we talked a lot about why it was good. So this one opened at 3.
Number 3, Bri Guy.
Price is Right, number 4.
Okay.
And Al, where are you coming in?
I'm going with number 1.
Al with number 1. All right. So this is the top 10 of the week for August 30th, 1996. At number 10, we have Fargo. At
number 10.
At number 10. It's been open for a while, Fargo, at this point.
Yeah.
At number 9, A Very Brady Sequel. At number 8, Trainspotting. Number 7, we've got Independence Day. Still hanging in. What? That's about 2 months after open.
Wait, hang on a second. A Very Brady Sequel was at what?
Number 9.
Number 9?
Yeah.
Didn't A Very Brady Sequel get a mention in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Did it?
I've mentioned it a couple times because it did. Both of them did really well, surprisingly.
No. I mean, Ivan Ooze said the name of the Barry Brady sequel.
Oh no! He said the Brady Bunch reunion. So do you guys?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you guys remember that was a made for TV movie that was a drama, which came out in 1990.
Yeah, I remember.
It was terrible. It was a drama.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All the Bradys look alike to me.
Ooh, how Bradyist of you, Al.
All white people look alike, dude. It's not just the Brady family.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Where were we on our countdown?
Yeah, so Independence Day was 7. Coming in at number 6, Jack. The that was that Robin Williams one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I believe so.
Number 5, still hanging in there, The Island of Dr. Moreau. We talked about that last week.
That is a puzzler.
Yeah, for a movie that was so terrible, that was such a notorious bomb, it's really hanging in there. At number 4, Matthew McConaughey in A Time to Kill. So number 3, opening this week, First Kid. Was that Sinbad?
That was Sinbad, yeah. And I don't know the kid. I don't think he was like, I think he's maybe a kid they were trying to make into a Culkin type thing.
Yeah, but he didn't take.
No.
Wow.
At number 2, the Kevin Costner golf movie, Tin Cup.
Filmed in Tupac.
That's right, yeah.
Filmed in Tupac, Arizona, yep.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, because Costner was aware of Tubac because he previously filmed The Postman in Amato.
I thought it was reversed. Yeah, no, maybe not. But yeah, he had gone and done one of the movies and really liked it at the Amato Junction.
Yeah. That was The Postman. That was when we were still in high school. He was filming that there.
Yeah, they had a set built up near the big tree.
Yeah. You know
what I mean. Yeah. It was there for a long time.
And so The Crow, City of Angels opened at number 1. It took in.
Yes.
It took in a lot. Wow. Yeah. Al takes it again. Al's cleaning up at the box office game.
Oh, Josh is doing good, too. I've checked the records.
Ooh, Al's keeping track, which is good. Someone is.
I'm glad. Yeah, somebody's keeping track.
Thank God.
So it took in 11 million its first week, and it did a total of 17. So it did not have good word of mouth.
They just went to watch the Korn music video.
Yeah, right.
Korn music.
Korn music. My favorite vegetable music.
Yeah.
I just imagine the sound of a can of corn opening, because that's my relationship to corn.
Brian has a very complex relationship with corn.
Yeah, it's in almost everything we eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I eat it out of the can. That's how I know it's corn.
You're all, would you like a corn on the cob? No. How do I know that's corn?
You know, I lived for a while in Wisconsin, which is, you know, Midwest. And so corn and cheese, of course, but corn is very big there. And there's a place.
Like the plants grow extra tall, or?
Yeah,
high as an elephant's eye.
Yeah. But yeah, so when corn is harvested every year, it's a big deal. And there, the supermarkets have. We'll have like fresh corn on the cob and people come in and buy like 1,000 of them. But the supermarkets had this thing out front where there's a game called Cornhole. And they have big signs that say Cornhole for charity. Which is
it's like boxing for Jesus or something.
Yeah. But
Well, I've always seen cornhole played with like bean bags or something like that. What, did they used to throw corn cobs?
I imagine they probably did. I'm only
seems like it'd be even harder.
I'm only
bags of corn.
I was previous
bags of corn.
Like they cracked open a can.
Yes, that's right. Brian's only aware of canned corn.
It grows straight from the can on the plant.
I don't think corn harvest season is as big a deal as it anywhere as it is in Mitchell's, South Dakota.
Yes.
Corn Palace.
The Ooh. Corn Palace, yeah.
I imagine not.
Is the band Corn from there?
No, but every year they make mosaics out of corn on the walls of the Corn Palace. Every year they make new mosaics.
I hope they get a corn mosaic, like they're, corn with a K and a backwards R, corn.
If they didn't, it was a missed opportunity.
Well, it's
an impressive little attraction. We drove out of our way to see it.
What is this place called?
The Corn Palace?
The Corn Palace.
Yes.
Where the Corn Queen has dominion over all her subjects.
I bet there's a pageant.
Oh my God. Yeah. I bet it's a corn princess.
It's actually a convention center. They have bands and they had a craft fair when we were there. But yeah, Al's right. The whole facade is kernels of corn. The entire thing is.
Yeah,
corn.
I Googled it. Folks, Google this place. You will feel weird emotions about it. There's too much corn going on.
Yeah.
Well, and there's corn. Well, I mean, I'm sure that there's more there, but like in Wisconsin, corn mazes are huge in the fall.
Yeah. Well, now back to our movie, Corn.
Yeah.
City of Corn.
Yeah, this has been our corn podcast. Oh, speaking of which, this is a corn perfect time. Talk. Hey, so patrons, I'll go ahead and I'm going to I've been releasing intermittently episodes of A Personal History of Sound, which is our music podcast, which may or may not make it public someday. I'm hoping it will. Our episode with our good friend Michael Chico, wherein we discuss corn, an entire corn podcast. I'll release that for the patrons this week. It seems to be a theme.
Far out.
Corn week.
This has been Corn Talk.
It's Corn
Week.
It's Corn Week at the Harmless Entertainment Network.
We're getting down to the bad rations.
This movie, The Crow City of Angels, something which is only very tentatively connected to corn, was directed by Tim Pope.
By who?
Tim Pope. Not the Pope, Tim Pope. a man who mostly directed...
That's his kid?
Yeah, that's Pope Jr.
So it wasn't Pope Tim.
No.
Tim Pope.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Tim the repentant.
Maybe one day he'll
Tim the tool man Pope.
I can't believe you said Tim the tool man, because I almost made this inside joke reference Josh and I used to have about Richard Karn, who plays Al, having his own radio show about corn. What? It was called Corn Talk with Karn.
Are you kidding? Is that a real thing?
No, it was a joke that we used to make, and I left it out because there was no point, but he just brought up Home Improvement organically. No corn pun. That's insane.
Yeah, that was organic corn.
That was organic corn right there.
It is corn week. Okay. Tim Pope directed mostly music videos prior to this. He directed...
No.
Yeah, get out of town. He directed Tainted...
This wasn't a music video?
Essentially. He directed Tainted Love, Safety Dance, Just Like Heaven, It's My Life, Eternal Flame by the Bengals, It's Magic by the Cars, Life in a Northern Town, I Alone by Live. He was a big music video guy. His only non-music video credit prior to this was a short film called Phone. It starred Bill Pullman. This was his only feature credit. He did not make another full-length movie. This was written by David S. Goyer, who is very prolific, and we will be seeing him again. He wrote Death Warrant, Kickboxer 2, Pet Sematary 2, Dark City, Blade Blade 2, Freddy versus Jason, Blade Trinity, Batman Begins. He has a credit on. He didn't.
I thought you ran it to get Blade 2, Freddy versus Jason.
Blade 2, Freddy versus Jason. That is a movie I want to see.
All right, so he
has a story by credit on Batman Begins. He wrote Jumper. He has a story by credit on The Dark Knight. He wrote Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. He has a story credit on The Dark Knight Rises. He wrote Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, and Terminator Dark Fate. So it's a mixed bag from Goyer.
Yeah, he sounds like a ringer that you call in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know for better or not, but
yeah, I think
that's usually what a story by credit is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Or it means he like wrote the script and then it was rewritten to the point where they have to legally credit him, but not there's not enough left to actually have a written by.
Right. Right.
So the story with this is that Goyer. OK, so the Weinsteins, this was a Miramax film. The Weinsteins commissioned this. And then they hired Goyer to write it. And they hired on Tim Pope on the strength of Phone, starring Bill Pullman. And so Pope and Goyer apparently had a vision for this film. They wanted it to be a very separate thing. Originally, Sarah was going to be the Crow. But they decided not to go that route. Goyer wrote this, they made this, they apparently worked very closely, Goyer and Pope, and then when it was done, the studio said, we hate it, and completely re-edited it, and then Goyer and Pope both disowned the finished product.
Mm-hmm. This was filmed in Australia, right?
I don't know.
No, this was all filmed in L.A. No, that was in the credits. This was entirely filmed in Los Angeles.
That's
curious.
Amazing, because it just screams one set all night long.
Yeah. Thomas Jane's in it. There's the Crow himself sounds either New Zealand or Pacific Islander.
Oh no. Okay, so yeah, now let's get to the cast. That was Vincent.
Pope and Goyer, they wanted to make it substantially different from the first Crow movie, but Miramax, they ordered the film to be re-edited so it would as closely resemble the first movie as possible.
Success.
Yes.
Specifically, they didn't just say, we hate this, re-edit it. They said, make it like the first one.
Well, right. I doubt the Weinsteins cared about the saga of the Crow.
Yeah. They just wanted it to reflect the product they were investing in.
Yeah, it opened it number one.
Yeah. Well, it made its money. I mean, it could have made more if it was an actually good movie, but
yeah.
But okay, so the cast. Vincent Perez is French.
French.
That makes sense.
He was in Cyrano. Yeah. He was in the Cyrano de Bergerac film with Gerard Depardieu. He was in Queen of the Damned, and then he was in a bunch of French movies none of us will ever have heard of because we don't speak French.
I was going to say, was he in Forget Paris? Because I don't remember him at all.
That is the accent you were hearing, Josh.
That's curious. Wow. Not that I'm an expert by any means, but I didn't hear French.
I believe he was
in with the name.
It's not a Star Wars movie, Josh, but there are French speaking Polynesians, so like Tahiti. So you know.
That's true. Yeah, all right.
I believe he was French by way of the Netherlands. So it might be an even weirder accent.
Or Belgium.
Belgium, possibly.
So Flanders.
Yeah.
Type area.
Yeah.
With a name like Vincent Perez, I would have thought him Spanish or
Latin
American.
Well, it's probably pronounced Perez,
but it's spelled Perez. It's probably not Perez.
Gay Perez.
Vincent Perez.
Oui.
Yeah, that's it.
They got crazy stuff going. So was he? But he was hired because he looks like Brandon Lee, then, right?
I mean, yeah, he vaguely remembers him. So, I mean, he is my biggest issue with this movie. He is. I found him to be personally to have zero magnetism. He had like just comparing like after seeing Brandon Lee. And then him in this role, just his physicality is embarrassing.
Yeah.
As like the way he would run towards his motorcycle was like, a French mime running, or like it was bad.
He got some of the camp. Well, I thought, I think that was just him not it being weird.
But I think the running and the walking, we can bring it up later, but I think that was a directorial choice because everyone except for maybe Sarah walks in a very strange dreamlike sort of almost like insecty kind of way. I can't put my finger on it, but
I thought the creepy casting choice of him was weird because basically the only requirement of becoming the Crow is looking like Brandon Lee.
Yeah, apparently.
You know, like they really should have gone with just, you know, some redheaded guy or, you know, person of color or something.
Yeah.
Not a Brandon Lee lookalike.
Well, and I think actually this answers the question that we had the first time. The Crow is the Crow.
Yeah, it's not the guy. Bird. It is not the guy. Yeah, that seems much clearer in this film.
Specifically, yeah, he's like, I'm going to capture the Crow. And we all thought he meant the character. But no, the star of the movie
is the bird. Crow. Yes. Well, and Vincent Perez's midriff.
Oh, dude. Look great, man.
This also starred Mia Kirshner, who she was in a bunch of movies prior to this that people haven't really heard of afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know who she is.
So she's she didn't have a lot of success in film. The biggest one after this, let's see, she was in Not Another Teen Movie. She was in a bunch of stuff, but also Not Another Teen Movie.
She didn't have in film, so I would know her from her waitressing career.
No, for TV, television. But
all right, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Not Another Teen Movie, The Black Dahlia, Party Monster, 30 Days of Night 2. let's see, on TV, she was they come back The Vampire Diaries. Graceland.
So if I ever meet her, she's going to mispronounce my name and call me Alaric.
She will.
Oh, absolutely. She spent 5 years on The L Word. That was her biggest claim to fame. And she's currently on Star Trek Discovery as Amanda Grayson.
I'm looking forward to seeing some episodes of that with her.
Well, neat.
Why not?
She's most well known as the lead of The L Word.
Oh, okay. That was a big show.
Yeah, it was big. I mean, yeah, it made her, you know, somewhat known. That's what I know her from. Let's see, we've got Richard Brooks. I believe that was Judah.
Judah.
Yeah, Judah. He was in Teen Wolf, The Hidden, Off Limits, Shakedown, and Wes Craven's Shocker.
Oh.
On TV, he was most well known for Law and Order and for playing the bounty hunter in the series finale of Firefly.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. He's also he's in 4 episodes of The Flash as Warden Gregory Wolfe.
Nice.
Okay.
We've got Iggy Pop, Mr. Pop, best known as the godfather of punk. Both of his work with the Stooges and his solo outpark during the 70s. His on-screen work includes, he was in Sid and Nancy, The Color of Money, the Rugrats movie, Snow Day, Coffee and Cigarettes, Cry Baby, Dead Man and Tank Girl.
So Iggy Pop had originally been offered the role of Fun Boy for the first film.
Yes.
Oh.
But he didn't take it for whatever reason.
Yeah, don't know the reason. Yeah.
We do have Thomas Jane in this again. He's just in a bunch of stuff. We see him. We're seeing him over and over again. This is what, his third appearance so far in a bit role for us.
Yeah, I believe so.
He'll eventually get the lead later on in a movie we will be covering in months. The Punisher. Whichever, the 2000 something Punisher. None of the rest of the cast was especially well known or notable. Anyone you wanted to mention, Al? You seem to have done a little research cast wise.
Not on Thomas Jane. Because we had talked about him a bit before, yeah, when he had a smaller part. But The Expanse is big right now.
Yeah, it is. It's always big.
Yeah, that's how an expanse works.
Expansive, you might say.
Yeah.
How do those puns keep working? You guys got to stop encouraging.
So this movie has 12% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was not.
Oh, hey, before we get. I'm sorry. Before we get too far from the cast, I did also note that Tori Amos turned down the role of Sarah.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Huh.
Yeah, she did.
And also, John Bon Jovi auditioned for the role of Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weird. Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Vincent Perez's with his bob and his half shirt and his weird walking, I just was not at all impressed with that.
And either he was too emotional or he was too chatty about his emotions, but he didn't have that like intense presence like Brandon Lee had as the Crow. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
this Crow talks to you an awful lot.
He really does. Well, yeah, and it's sorry, Al. It is crazy. I hadn't realized watching the first Crow, but Brandon Lee really did have a pretty magnetic screen presence.
Yeah, comparatively, certainly.
Yeah, I was just going to say that Brandon Lee had a certain amount of intermittent joviality.
Yeah. Sinister, yeah.
His moments with Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He did. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Ernie Hudson brings out the best in us.
He just had more character than Victor.
Yeah, he really did. He's just a better screen presence than Victor. I mean, I'm sure his. I don't know if something's lost in this being an English speaking role and not his first language. Maybe he's much better in French, but I just didn't find him especially compelling as a lead.
No.
But this was not reviewed by Siskel or Ebert that I could find in any way. So that's about it with the pre-pro, as I call it.
Mm-hmm. Also, the business.
I didn't notice at first. I didn't notice them say his name. Maybe they did, but when I was looking it up, so it was the title, the lead character, Ash Corvin.
I thought it was Corvin.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit on the nose.
I used to own a Ford Corvin.
Why on the nose? Like, because it's close to Craven?
No, because it's close to Corvid, which is the classification for crows, ravens, and other blackbirds.
Oh wow. Okay.
Huh. Science.
Al bringing it
from the makers of corn.
Try science now in your supermarket.
That's all that's in the supermarket.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
All right. Well, let's get on our crows and ride.
Yes. So are we ready to jump into the movie here, fellers?
Wait, I want to make a distinction. Wouldn't we be the crows ourselves, though? No, I'm just sorry.
Right.
Let's just,
no,
let's just
right.
get into
yeah.
it.
So, yeah. Let's go bring a spirit back.
Yeah, from the land of the dead. I don't know. How does the crow even choose? Is it only people that are, like, killed by drug kingpins?
Like,
is there ever, like...
And it has to be tragic. You can't be, like, another drug dealer or something.
Yeah. Right. Revenge.
And you have to as a family member. There's a lot of specific criteria.
There really
you have
is.
To nope. have exactly five people to take vengeance upon.
Yeah, exactly.
Really? Five?
Yeah, you know, for every point of the crow's wings, you know?
Yeah, you have to work your way up through the sub-bosses.
I mean,
like Mario Brothers.
Yeah, that would be a great video game. That would have been great, just whipping a bunch of gangster guys asses as the crow.
Yeah.
There has to be one.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It reminds me of the modern, like, EA super realistic video games.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So if there are only four people that you want to kill when you're dying, then that's not good enough.
Yeah.
But six, that's too much.
Yeah, you become like
it's too much for the crow.
There has to be
five.
There has to be exactly five because... You need exactly 10 minutes per person, and it has to be a 40-minute middle act. So,
well, and yeah. an unladen crow can't carry more than five people at a time.
That is also true.
A European crow or
which is a good
a magical murder crow,
which is a good time to mention that next week, speaking of Monty Python, we. At some point this month, we are going to be doing for our patrons, and it's only going to cost you $1 to hear these things, guys. These are at a dollar level to hear our monthly movie. This month for April, we are going to be watching and discussing Monty Python's The Life of Brian.
Yes. He's a very naughty boy.
Oh, 666. That's all you ever think about.
Wolf nipple chips, ocelot earlobes. I'm a Red Sea pedestrian and proud of it.
We could literally spend the rest of this podcast just quoting this movie.
Yeah, that's what it's going to end up being. Yeah,
but we're not even better going to watch the movie. We're not even going to watch the movie for the monthly thing. We're just going to.
Yeah,
just gonna quote everything from memory.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. So yeah. So guys, $1. That's all it takes. Sign up. Be a patron. $1 is all you need to listen to our monthly movie. Last month we did Independence Day. This month we're doing Life of Brian. Next month, what will it be? We don't know yet. We'll let you know when we find out. So that being said, are we ready to talk about the Crow City of Angels?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. All right, here we go, guys. This is the Crow City of Angels. We open with a pair of tied up bodies underwater. A crow flies through the city. It's L.A., the City of Angels. You know, the city from the title. There's a voiceover.
The voiceover. So the first movie, we made fun of it because it was like, some people believe a crow carries you. This one literally started with Sarah saying, I believe.
Yeah, it's almost like David Goyer was like, you know, some people's a little vague. We need to know exactly who believes this.
Yeah, this woman. That's what made it happen.
He's like, and if I believe it, it must be so. Yeah, so there's a voiceover about souls coming back to do the things. The crow visits Sarah, now a grown-up. So, okay, this is 3 years later, and Sarah went from being 12 to 25.
Wait, there was a time jump? We saw her as a kid?
Sarah, she was the little girl from the first movie.
Oh,
are you kidding?
No.
I did not
a teenager.
Know that.
Wait, you did not catch that?
I was completely unaware, and I watched this movie twice.
Yeah. Well, what did they come out and say it?
Yeah.
Well, she was wearing the why she believes.
She was wearing the wedding ring.
She was wearing the wedding ring and her and
she's
her
wearing the engagement ring.
And her tattoo boss guy talk about how much better it is since she moved from Detroit.
Yeah, and so she would be what, 15?
Is she another criteria of becoming the crow? You have to encounter this girl?
I don't know.
Be nearby.
What?
We've blown some minds.
She doesn't seem at all. She doesn't recognize this guy looking.
No, she does. That's why she goes to find him. She's like, I know what's happening. I'm telling you about it. And she's the one that tells him, like, no, you've come back from the dead. You got to kill some people.
Uh-huh. I thought she just believed that shit.
No.
Same. I didn't think that she had experienced it firsthand.
That's why she believes it.
In the 90s.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, L.A. in the 90s was a bit of a shit show, but
yeah,
she's personally experienced it.
Wow.
Fuck. The ring told us that? It was supposed to be, and the guy says, you moved from Detroit.
I remember playing with the ring.
And she has the same name.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. All right. Yeah.
Sorry. I guess this movie was for the fans of the first Crow movie.
It really was? Wow. Yeah.
No, it has a direct connection.
Okay.
That's also why they wanted Sarah to be the Crow personification in the first round of the screenplay.
Yeah.
Now I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Because honestly, when you said that, I was like, oh, that would have been a cool choice.
Yeah.
But now that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not just a cool choice. So, this doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And again, it's three.
Yeah, this movie makes less sense.
It hurts. Yeah, exactly. It hurts the logic of this universe to have that be the same person. Yeah. That's very odd.
And it's also weird because this movie came out 3 years after the first one, and she's a solid like 10 to 12 years older.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, yeah. And have 10 years really gone by in LA? Is it worse or better? It seems the same.
Well, I mean, 3 years can feel like 10 years in LA, but.
I've spent a couple of weekends in LA that felt like 3 years. So.
Yeah. All right. Sarah.
Yeah.
Oh man,
that's her.
I'm upset. This is like learning that Palpatine was a clone in The Last Jedi. Spoiler alert.
Wait, what?
Or not The Last Jedi.
Oh,
the last. Well, the Rise of Skywalker.
Well, I mean, technically speaking, if we're to take all the retcons from The Last Skywalker, then he was a clone in The Last Jedi, controlling.
He was just hanging out.
Yep, in the background, like, I won't do anything on screen right now.
He was entertaining that giant stadium full of Sith.
Doing a puppet show with a couple of the Snoke guys. Just like, hello, my name is Cindy. Hello, Cindy, nice to meet you.
It could have been that. Mm-hmm. I love that Sarah says they called this the City of Angels because all I could hear was Sam Elliott from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah. What if it had been Sam Elliott as the Crow?
Yeah. I didn't find it to be that exactly.
What if it had been Sam Elliott as Sarah?
Oh, that would have been
much better. Then I would have known that he was the kid from the first one.
I believe that a crow will come kill some gangsters.
We're going to work on that impression.
Yeah, we'll work on it.
I'll work on my Sam Elliott impression.
Workshop. Yeah.
So Sarah is now grown up. She's sleeping and dreaming of murder. She wakes up and the crow flies away. And Sarah showers in her, like, she has wooden shower doors with windows, by the way.
Well, just like in the first one, I know it's a part of that sort of dark, you know, gothic vibe. But yeah, like another loft that has electricity running to it and parts of it are decorated and then other parts look like an attic with all the garbage and dust. And it's just odd. Is she paying rent there?
Yeah.
She has electricity.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is she paying for her rent? Does she sell that part? Like,
she's a tattoo artist.
Yeah, she has a job.
Oh, that's right.
That pays good money.
Sure can. Especially in the 90s.
I mean,
well, there's no one on the streets of LA in this movie.
No, the streets are empty. Children.
This is like the surface of the streets of LA in Blade, basically. Yeah. There are no normal people. They all just live in like a sub basement.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So she finds a homeless girl and buys her some food. This is a plot thread that went fucking nowhere. This definitely got cut out by the Weinsteins, whatever this was about.
Oh yeah, there was something, yeah. Because we're supposed to believe later on that she's a drug addict, right? Or she was just holding that packet.
They point towards her being a drug addict, but I mean, again, it's so completely underdeveloped. Like, they should have just cut the girl out completely.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely underdeveloped. The 9-year-old drug addict living on. Yeah, there was a story we didn't see.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we meet crime lord Judah, who's kind of goth and way into melodrama. He's got a private witch and kills off a drug dealer who destroyed a batch of his product.
instead of the public witches we all have to use.
Right.
And she was dressed like a Spaceballs character, which was weird.
Yeah. It was. And that's clearly the tallest building in LA, and his dungeon is on the top floor.
Right. Was that Tower Records?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bank. I don't know what it is. Insurance building, but yeah.
Right below him is like an investment firm.
Yeah. Exactly. The corporate office is a Burger King.
There's a TV station.
Yeah, exactly. Where Blank Man works.
Exactly. So,
all right. So Judah, he
kills the drug dealer who destroyed a batch of his product because it was killing people.
I thought that guy, Bassett, was his name.
Bassett, hound.
Yeah, it was Bassett. I found him to be channeling Jon Stewart, like from The Daily Show.
Really?
Yeah, it was.
That is a take I was not expecting.
I know. It was like Jon Stewart doing a bit.
Which bit?
I don't think it's the drug dealer bit.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. It's killing people. Yeah, I could see that.
His conspiracy theorist in Half Baked. That was a
Blue team go. Blue team go.
Bassett. Yeah, exactly. Bassett.
Bassett, we hardly knew ye. So and meanwhile, Sarah is at her job as a tattoo artist. She is not good. The way she's just grinding that needle into that dude's skull.
Well, it's filthy, the whole place.
Well, I was looking at the tattoo she was doing. It's like so patchy and like half of it's like filled in and half of it's not. Like, she's never tattooed someone before. This is her first time.
Her lines and her textures are terrible.
Yeah. And the Australian guy.
her tattoo daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Constantly telling her everything's going to be okay while nothing is okay all around her.
Yeah, right. Everything's going to be fine. And I'm probably like a gay representation character, but for no apparent reason, there was a lot cut out of this guy's character too. You can tell.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, he's like, that's no crow, that's a wallygogo, right? We got a real snaggle jumper. Yeah. I wanted him to have more scenes.
He grabs her ass, and she just laughs it off.
Oh, ha.
Yeah, exactly. And he invites her out for a beer, but she says no because she needs to go home and sleep because she's been having weird dreams.
Yeah. How do you live in that hellscape and have pleasant dreams?
Right. She's like, this is so much better than Detroit. Is it? It seems like it's exactly
in his loft.
It seems like it's exactly the same as the Detroit you came from.
Yeah, that's that Gen X thing that I was kind of talking about. Like, they already knew that everything was effed, so they were just painting clear pictures of what the 10 years later would look like.
Yeah,
to them.
No, it's got that.
Like, this is the inevitable end of Ronald Reagan's power type thing. You know what I mean? Like, this is what's left. There's no, it's, yeah, LA's burned to the ground.
Yeah, no, it's, everything was super bleak. And that's, yeah. Surprise, we were right.
Yep. That's what I was getting at. Yes.
That night, she's visited by a crow. It leads her down to the dock. Where she watches
via crow vision,
right? It leads her to the docks where she watches as a guy bursts forth from the water. Is it Aquaman? No, he's French.
No.
So meanwhile, Judah and his witch are doing some sort of magic. They've got like that TV bowl concave dome thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, she has the power of prophecy, but you're right. They're always looking into that cloudy crystal ball thing.
Yeah, which is, yeah, it's just a weird dome that they can watch too. Things.
Right.
But he can see it. He just can't see what it says.
Okay. He just can't read it. I wonder what he sees then.
It's literally just,
I don't know,
B-roll from this movie.
Like, he's the boss.
It's like you reading French.
Yeah. It's still in front of me, but I don't understand it. Yeah. I guess I understand.
So the witch.
I just picture what he sees is the bottom of a magic eight ball.
The future is cloudy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
The witch says that death's coming for him. Surprise. So then back at Sarah's place, the guy from the water show wakes up. He tells Sarah his name's Ash and then freaks out when she tells him he's still dead. He runs away back to his house. He has a flashback to the day he and his son were killed by Iggy Pop, and Sarah finds him. She tells him he's there to kill the people that killed him, crow style.
So when he was having his flashback, they hear the gunshots, and Danny looks like he just heard an ice cream truck. He's like, "Did you hear that? Let's go check it out."
Yeah,
well, in that neighborhood, that would be
stupid fucking
scary.
Kid. Yeah,
his blue son, like an asshole.
Danny was the worst.
Danny sucked. Yeah. And did he have a French accent too? The kid had a weird accent.
Yes, that's why I thought it was in Australia, because they all sounded a little off, but still close to American accents. But yeah. Huh. Danny.
Yeah.
So they kill Danny because they can't have any witnesses, but they have that dude who carries his video camera around with him.
Right.
Like
they're literally
like
creating
he's
evidence.
Cribs or something.
That is video evidence of them committing the crime of covering up their first crime.
And honestly, who's going to testify against these guys?
Right. Magic drug dealer man.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's no police. And okay, so the time frame of this movie, does this take place over a single night? Because we see no daylight. The entire thing is at nighttime.
Well, it's sort of like Devil's Night in the first one, right?
Yeah, but even that took place like over
night.
2 to 3 days. Like there was Devil's Night coming
there
up.
There was an eclipse.
That was it.
The whole time. Another requirement for becoming the crow, there has to be like a couple of days long eclipse.
That's right.
That's right.
So, I'm trying. I don't know.
It was on the vernal equinox.
It's LA. It was just all the smog.
It's true.
There you go. LA.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
LA.
Lots of
LA in the 90s didn't LA in the 90s didn't experience daylight for a solid 7 years.
Yeah. Yes. So much commentary.
Hey everyone, Thoreau from Harmless Phosphorescence here with a message for you. Yes, you listening to me talk. Did you know that the Harmless Entertainment Network has a Patreon? That's right, you can join in and get extra fun like a Star Wars Harmless Phosphorescence miniseries, a patron-only Q&A roundtable episode. We have great bonus episodes of audio dramas like Attention Hellmark Shoppers in 1994. But not only that, if we reach our next patron goal, we'll do a monthly bonus Harmless Phosphorescence about a patron chosen non-superhero movie. Plus, there are great new shows on the way, and if you're a patron, you'll get to hear them first. Head over to patreon.com/harmlessentertainment today, and for the price of a cup of coffee, you too can join our super awesome superhero club. Now, back to the show.
So, Sarah gives Ash a makeover, and then he heads out on his hog to put right what once went wrong, Quantum Leap style.
Yeah, how does he not get his jacket caught in the wheel of that bike?
Why does he wear a half shirt?
I think that's what the jacket is designed for. It's a motorcycle duster.
He wears half a shirt.
That was a dirt bike.
He wears half a shirt and a heavy leather coat. One or the other, dude. Like, are you cold or hot?
Yeah, and there was no guard over the tires. It was a dirt bike that I guess he used to work on all the time.
My midriff is warm, but everything else is cold.
It's simple science.
It's real sweaty around the waist.
So what was the name of the bad guy that was holding the video camera?
Nemo.
Thomas Jane.
Oh, that was Thomas Jane. I thought so. Yeah, with his wig on, he looks just like Amanda Plummer from The Fisher King. Did everybody know? Oh my God. She is? Yeah.
Yes.
She is Pulp Fiction. Yeah. He looked just like that character.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He did. I didn't recognize him for a while because of the wig and how spazzy he was being.
He was the Lon Chaney of his time.
So, okay, the Crow leads Ash to a drug lab where Big Bird on crack looking motherfucker's working. His name's Monkey, Spider Monkey, and he was in the crew that killed Ash and Ash Jr. Spider Monkey gives up the rest of the crew pretty quick-like. Ash does some close-up street magic and then blows the place up with Spider Monkey inside.
Dude, this Crow personification's got some magic tricks.
He does.
Yeah.
He's got dad magic.
He's like David.
Before LA went to shit, he used to perform at the comedy castle, magic castle, whatever it is.
And every time he kills someone, he goes...
That was his job.
Every time he kills someone, he goes, mind freak!
Totally. But that's what I meant. He was a little more quippy, a little more like, want to get nuts? Let's get nuts kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that this guy does, he quotes his killer's words like to them right before he kills them.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't recall Brandon Lee's character doing that as much.
No.
And they're two different people, but I guess that this power, I don't know.
Well, okay. And this Crow's makeup was so much clownier than Brandon Lee's was.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point, we discover that palm trees are explosive.
And then, only if a crow flies by it.
Yes.
Yeah, and they still exist. I didn't see a lot of vegetation in general.
No, we're like beyond Thunderdome, but then there's palm trees. But they're explosive.
Yeah.
So then later on, Iggy Pop arrives on the scene and sees the crow symbol that Ash left. He's got a crow tattoo, and his mom's name is Martha.
Martha.
Meanwhile,
was that another tattoo?
He had a what? His mom's name Martha.
Yeah, that's what he's asking. Was that a tattoo, Martha?
No. I was just because like he sees the crow symbol and he's like touches his crow tattoo and he's like, I have a deep connection with this.
Yeah, David Esquire did that later. You're right.
Yeah. So meanwhile, it's a typical night back at Judah's sex dungeon. Iggy Pop reports to him about the lab situation, and Judah's witch is concerned about his tat. So what exactly is happening in this like sex office? Because
that's why he has the top floor. Right. He's a sex office. He's a sex businessman.
He's a drug dealer, and he's a crime kingpin, but he has all this like S&M people like just tied up, but he's not participating in that. They're just tied up like as decorations.
He's doing witchcraft. That's all he's doing.
I'll bet the Weinsteins had a lot of notes on those scenes.
There's so much in this movie that's like, oh yeah, this is just like a music video guy being like, isn't that cool if we had like all these S&M people?
Yeah.
What screams sex office to you?
Organization.
Hot candle wax.
We keep our prisoners filed and collated here. Sex industries. Evil sex industries.
No, I took it, Brian, as you were saying, like, that's what a job interview of the sex office would be like. What can you bring to the sex office?
I mean, to be fair, this was produced by the Weinstein, so evil sex industries is kind of their thing.
Not right, exactly.
Well, how about I let you guys just chain me to the wall for about 8 hours a day? So that could be minimum
Sounds
wage.
Good. Sounds good, good, Judah.
What kind of dental package comes with that?
Well, we pull one tooth a week. I loved his voice. I don't think we've commented on how just deep his voice was the entire time.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I just want to like melt his voice and put it on a slice of toast. So good.
Well, and sometimes he sounded like that Baron Samedi character from Live and Let Die.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, there was definitely.
And he also did 7-Up commercials, but yes,
voodoo connection there.
Yeah,
it's cool.
So, Iggy Pop heads on over to Sarah's tattoo shop to lodge a customer service complaint, but she okay boomers him and steals his gun.
did we skip over Thomas Jane being killed in the Peep Show?
Oh no, it hasn't happened yet.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, because, Iggy Pop, he goes to the tattoo shop and is, like, bitching at her and then, like, leaves. But, like, he doesn't put the connection through between her and the crow. Like, it's really weird. He visits her twice, and it's like he does the same thing. Like, twice he shows up to be like, you put a crow tattoo on me, and now there's a crow killing people.
Right. Okay. That's why I was confused. Cause it happened more than once.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He does it twice. And the first time they like her and tattoo Papa like beat Iggy Pop up. Iggy Pop spits on the floor and leaves. And he's like, you know, I guess in this case, it's fine if they completely disrespect my power as a gun wielding crime lord.
This one time.
Just now. Yeah. So, yeah, and then at this point, Thomas Jane Nemo arrives at the sex shop with Peep Show booths. He partakes of their wares, but he doesn't get...
Which is strange, because they control every aspect of crime in the city, so prostitution, plus there are those like sex office parties you were just talking about. Like, the guy pretty much has access to sex and women.
Yeah.
Why is he going in every night and buying tokens?
Maybe that's just his thing. Maybe that's what he's into.
Harvey Weinstein? Question mark.
That's his fetish. He just likes him behind the glass.
So okay. So all I have to say about that whole scene, as a somebody who masturbates, why did he put one fucking coin into the machine?
I said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Why not put like all your coins in and just be like, no, I'm gonna sit back and relax. Like or there was there was like a level of panic involved in this guy's like kink here, and I made me anxious. I was just like, dude, whoa. Like
he's doing the thing where you're almost done, but somebody walks in or something happens, so you just you have no control over your limbs.
It was a really weird. I mean, it was the whole fucking situation was weird, but that was the thing that I noticed where I just went. That's really weird. You're adding extra steps when you really don't need to, my friend.
Such as putting the coins back in your jacket pocket. Yeah, leave them on the little thing.
Everybody that goes to an arcade knows there's a spot somewhere. You can just line the coins up.
Yeah, and if you're there every night, then get your shit together.
I say go to an arcade. Like I've been to one of these arcades. I'm talking about like a normal video game or like skee ball arcade. I don't know if these things exist anymore.
I mean, do they?
I don't know if they do. We have some funny stories.
Not curious enough.
I don't know if they exist anymore, but they did.
They did once
maybe
exist,
he just thought he could.
Maybe they did just, at that time,
Maybe his average time is about 60 seconds and he thought he could get it done.
He was trying to be frugal.
That's playing with fire. That's playing with fire. You can't call your shot like Babe Ruth. It's not the same thing.
So
corn week, ladies and gentlemen.
Corn week.
Yeah, so corn, it is corn week. So Ash shows
Brendan Lee is the corn.
The corn. So Ash shows up, recites some Vogon level poetry, and then kills Thomas Jane.
I did laugh at this point when the window, when he puts the second token in and the window goes up and I don't know, Vincent Perez's delivery of, do you want me, baby?
It was like, hasta la vista.
It did make me laugh both times that I saw this.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they had him be into that, because visually it's cool that, to have the screen come up and it's the crow.
Yeah. Yes, it is visually cool.
I know that. That happened to me once. In
a little, like, it was the crow?
It freaked me out.
The crow came up.
Yeah. Well, she looked like a crow.
So Iggy Pop later on arrives at the scene because he's apparently a reverse homicide detective and has to investigate all of his friends getting killed. And he gets a spooky phone call from Birdman.
I thought this was, hang on, when he walked in, he was singing his own entrance music.
It was I Want to Be Your Dog was playing.
Yes.
Oh, that's his song.
Was cool.
So Iggy Pop walked into some Iggy Pop music, and it was cool.
And what's more Iggy Pop than that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he was wearing a shirt, so it could have been more Iggy Pop.
You're right.
So why is there a landline inside the booth to watch the crow rings?
So
the crow then made a note of that number and went to a payphone to call the landline to this sex booth.
Right. Oh, that's what you mean. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he called the bunny booth phone from a payphone.
Because they used to have phones, right? Or was it just like a two-way speaker?
So I didn't think he called from a payphone. I thought he called from another booth. Because I assume they all had phones, and he came in through the stage, right?
Yeah.
So he probably like broke the glass or something, or maybe called from backstage. But he like called and was on stage moments later.
So that's amazing.
I assumed he was masturbating in another.
No. This is when he calls Iggy Pop, who's there investigating the murder.
Investigating.
Nemo's
That's what
already
it seems
dead.
Like.
Oh.
I know, it is. It is.
Yeah, with Nemo, though. Wasn't he, like, in another booth? Sorry, I missed that whole part, but, like, fuck.
Well, no, but those old booths, they used to have phones, right?
Yeah, so you could talk to the girl inside. They weren't connected right. to the phone yes, system.
They weren't landlines. Yes. Well,
yeah, I mean, if you needed to do business, you could do business from in there, too. I mean,
sex business,
I'm sure they have Wi-Fi and, like, coffee service.
In fact, that is like the Starbucks of sex business. That's where you would go for meetings if you were in sex business.
And everyone would just get in a booth and then on the phone. Be like, we've got to get these numbers up.
I'm gonna go down to the porno arcade and call my lawyer.
Exactly. I have an image from us going to the one on Oracle one time, or maybe it was Legros, but anyways, the image will always be in my mind of just Al's legs and Pabe's legs underneath one of the booths. We didn't have enough money, so we were doubling up.
You could have left that story out, buddy.
Oh, really?
All
sorry
our secrets,
to mention something you did at 18.
Al, all our secrets are laid bare in Corn Week.
Thank God, all right.
They didn't have those strip clubs in Mexico that I spent my time in as a kid. So,
since you brought it up, Pave was a full head shorter than I was, so we could stand in one booth and both see without impeding each other's vision. We only tried it once, and then we realized that the girl could see us, and she banged on the window and told us to get the fuck out.
Yeah, right. I remember seeing as if I was standing waiting to get in the booth, just the four sets of legs. It was, yeah. It was very funny at the time.
Hey, Al, all of this. Is Claire still listening to this?
Well, so she only listens to the ones that she's like hasn't attached, the movies that she has an attachment to.
Let's hope she's not into the Crow City of Angels.
How does she feel about the band Korn?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think she's a big Korn fan.
Well, I always referred to her as a freak on a leash. So
she's gonna hate this episode. She likes Korn.
I'm totally gonna add her.
And apparently Al can't run for Senate now since I dropped that bomb.
Man, and I was gonna do that next year.
Yeah,
you've been saying that for 20 years, Al.
I have.
Where are we? So yeah, okay. Ash wanders into a church where Father Fabulous and his flowing mane explain Dia de los Muertos, and then he goes and finds the homeless girl from the beginning where he mind freaks her and cures her of drugs.
He got priest-splained.
Yeah.
He got what?
Yeah, priests.
Priest-splained.
Oh, priest-splained.
Dia de los Muertos. Uh-huh. Which didn't make sense to me because it's like, how does he not know? He sounds Spanish. Apparently he sounds French. But I imagine he's been living in the city for a little while now.
Yeah, at least a
bit. That's a good point.
Or unless he and Danny were newcomers and those were the first gunshots they ever heard.
Damn.
They just got off the boat.
That's why they ran out to check it out.
They just got off the boat from France yesterday.
Yeah. And immediately started working on dirt bikes.
There's a huge like French dirt bike community in LA.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like the West Coast version of the Dutch in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, the Amish, the Mennonites.
Yeah,
I thought that the Day of the Dead imagery was done pretty well.
It looked good.
The flower petals everywhere. Of course, the masks are easy, that kind of thing. Skeletons and stuff. But the attention to detail with the flowers I thought was really kind of neat for anybody, everybody who's seen Coco. You know,
yeah.
They're actually an integral part of that. So it was just neat.
Marigolds,
No, I mean, this movie, the art direction in this movie was great. It looked really nice.
Yeah.
You can tell it's a guy that spends a lot of time on how stuff looks in the frame.
Right.
So, all right. So meanwhile, Judah and Iggy Pop are watching some TV. Witch Lady tells him that if he kills the crow, then Ash will be killable. So,
Sybil blinds Flame.
Somebody's crunching.
The crow is the source of Ash's power.
She reveals... The crow is actually the crow.
From the movie title. So Ash visits Sarah, tells her about his ex, tries to flirt a little, and then tells her he's interested in some light perversion of the laws of life and death. And he's like, what if I don't want to be dead? It's like, well, that ship's kind of sailed, buddy. at that point, Judah tells Iggy Pop that Sarah must be connected to the crow because of the tattoo she gave him, which I thought we had established like four scenes ago, and tells him to go find her. He kidnaps her tattoo daddy and tortures him for Sarah's location to the soothing sounds of corn.
Kali tattoos his eyeball.
Yeah.
For information.
She's
that was intense.
She's crazy.
Yeah, she don't care.
Zero fucks to give.
she's like, I am over this shit, man.
I bet, yeah.
Then Ash and Sarah chit-chat for a while, and then goth clown guy runs away, pulls his son's corpse out of the water, and buries him.
Sarah turns the tables on him, because, like, first he was flirting with her, and then she, like, kind of, I don't know, comes on to him. She's like, look at me, Ash. Look at me. And he's like, no, it's not right. And takes off.
He's like,
she's on.
You were 12 years old 3 years ago, and I'm a dead French clown.
Let's make this work.
He gets pretty aggressive with his son's art at this point. Burns up blue sun painting.
Yeah.
So he arrives back at Sarah.
He buries his son in a park.
I'm pretty sure there are codes about that.
like a dog or something.
I mean,
right.
He buries him in Pet Cemetery.
These are the first trees I saw since. The palm trees exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All the other parts of LA are only alleys. Only alleys and like mosh pits exist in this version of LA.
And the LA River.
Yeah.
But that's coming up.
Yeah.
Which apparently at this point actually has water in it.
I guess the irrigation gets better in this future.
Someone should tell Jake.
It's like you control the drugs and the prostitution and the water table. So we appreciate you bringing it back up.
Like, it's Crow Town. It's Corn Town.
Cron.
He arrives back at Sarah's to find her gone, finds Callie there waiting for him. They fight and he throws her out the window.
I wish she had sung Hush Little Baby, Don't Say a Word. You're a magical murder bird.
Yeah, he threw her out the window to a fucking lullaby.
Yeah. Which that's is the so lullaby. Weird. Well, that's the lullaby she sang to his son when she killed him.
Well, and we're definitely underplaying the fact that they didn't just fight. They ninja star fought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yes,
fun to find out.
Like, she threw one ninja star at him.
Well, and he threw it back at her.
I think
well,
it counts.
I don't know. She had a butterfly knife, and if you ask any 14-year-old boy, that's the most unbeatable weapon there is. It's I don't know why she loved
it. That's true.
And she, but she didn't even flip it around. She didn't
no.
do cool butterfly knife tricks.
No,
she wasted it.
That's why she lost.
She pulled it out. She pulled it out slowly. She didn't have the finesse.
Yeah. It's like wearing a jetpack and you don't plan on flying. What a ripoff.
So the crow goes, or the crow, Ash goes and finds Iggy Pop at a raging kegger and tries to take him out. But he ends up getting shot at by the other partygoers and does a bullet dance for a while.
Why is his name Curve? Does anybody have any theories? Curve?
Because he, I don't know, because he likes bikes.
Because he always gets a like 50% on his tests.
because, it's those hips, man. It's those
hips.
They don't Curry. Lie.
Gotcha.
I love Iggy so Pops. I love Iggy Pops. These hips don't lie.
It's like we know we can see them in great definition.
This was the first point that I noticed that they were snorting black powder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is this drug?
I don't know. Well,
I saw it early on in one of the very first scenes, but I thought it was just one of them being psycho because they were also holding bullets. So I thought one of them just like had snorted the saltpeter or whatever. Gunpowder.
Okay. Well, yeah, and there's one point.
But no, then later on, it's the drugs. Yeah,
there's one point where one of them dumps it out all over a flower, and then just shoves the flower in his face to snort it off. Like that is such a waste of your drugs.
Yeah,
they've got a lot of it.
I guess. So, yeah, okay. They do a motorcycle chase that culminates in Ash killing Iggy Pop, and once again doing some street magic.
That culminates in them standing at the end of a tunnel away from each other.
Yeah.
Somehow. And then him getting back on his bike and then Iggy Pop riding towards him. And then he just fucking blows up the bike.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
He shoots the gas tank.
And the bike just shoots Iggy Pop.
The pain, man.
Mind freak.
Suspense. Mind freak.
Yeah,
mind freak. Yes,
that's exactly.
We probably jumped it, but I think he's going into the tattoo shop or whatever. But Ash looks down at a dog, and the dog is wearing a Dia de los Muertos.
Oh yeah, this is before he went into the church.
Oh,
so cute.
I know, and the dog looks up to him kind of sweetly. It's just like I wanted to be Batman.
They made me be a skeleton.
That was really cute. That's funny.
Yeah. Okay, so back at Judah's, Sarah's chained up. We find out that Witch Lady's blind. Judah tells Sarah that he's using her to lure the crow in so he can capture it. Good thing he had already had a sex business office with a lot of chains and stuff.
Luckily.
Yeah. So Judah. Oh, wait. Okay. So the crow arrives, sees Sarah, and sends psychic links to Ash that through his crow sight. And so Ash rushes over, only to be extremely. Wait. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Only to be extremely disoriented while trying to navigate through the world's widest mosh pit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no. When the crow shows up there, Sarah tries to shoo it away because she knows that it's a trap.
Yeah.
But the crow's just standing there in a cage. A little cage descends from the ceiling, falls from the ceiling on a chain. Uh-huh. And it takes nearly 7 seconds for that cage to fall.
Oh, it's
while he's not looking at it. He's looking around like left to right.
Doesn't even look up. It falls at the same speed that Lois fell from the waterfalls in Superman 2.
Yes. Days and days.
But I actually timed it. It took almost 7 seconds because it took so long. That's why I had to like pull out a stopwatch. It took almost 7 seconds. And, you know, crows can, birds fly in front of my car, like.
Yeah. Well, okay, and also, so that is a very small cage. How did Judah know that that's exactly the point where the crow would land to position the cage over?
I don't know, but it proves that the crow is not all that bright. Just by being a crow. Yeah.
It's just a regular crow.
Yeah, he just wants to bring you buttons and pieces of glass. Shiny things.
7 seconds. He was just 1 second shy of a Luke Perry movie.
So he captures the crow. Ash finally gets through the Day of the Dead party to Judah's building and begins to climb up the side of the building.
The tallest building around.
Yeah. While Judah,
and that's what I was moving. You mentioned it a little bit, him moving through the crowd. That's kind of what I was talking about. Like, you know how in a dream you sometimes can't move the way you normally can.
Yeah.
You're much, much slower, as if stuck in glue. And him trying to get through the crowd totally gave me that impression.
Yeah. I could.
Yeah.
And I was looking, some of the extras in that scene were like, like there was a lot of like 40 to 50 year old white dudes in flannel.
Yes. I was waiting for you to say that. Yeah, women too. It was a lot of middle-aged people.
What are these like middle-aged suburban like people doing partying at the like drug kingpins like Day of the Dead party?
They all came out for the Deftones, man. Everybody loves the Deftones,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we get a Deftones cameo here. Mm-hmm. So yay! So
is this? Did Iggy Pop already refer to the term "pussy seat"?
Yes, he said. I want to. You know, he said, "I want to staple you to my pussy seat." Is that what he said?
Something like that. What does that mean?
That's what he said to Noah. That's the seat that's the passenger seat on a motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, the bitch seat. Okay.
I was so confused as to what a pussy seat was.
Yeah, I thought it was something on him.
Oh my God. Iggy Pops refers to a part of his own body as a pussy seat.
I thought he meant lap, and I'm just not hip to the rock and roll jargon.
I could see that too. All right. Anyways, Judah kills the crow. Ash falls off the building as the power animal's dead now. So
when Judah killed the crow, this was actually the most heartbreaking moment of the movie.
Yeah. If there was one.
When he killed the bird, it was sad.
It was a sad crow puppet.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And he was smacking it in the face.
Yeah. He was, you like that, don't you?
He was like, this is a sex office. I got to get a little bit.
I'm sorry, crow. You came to my sex office. I didn't come to yours.
So Judah then drinks crow blood, and the witch explains to the audience that Judah has taken Ash's power as a murder of crow swarms around the tower.
So okay, that's a new thing. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was going to say, as somebody who's been trying to figure out how the fuck the crow gets its powers, that's not how that shit works.
Right.
Yeah, drinking like the crow's blood. Like,
I thought the crow was the spirit crow. You know, how many years does a crow live? But I thought even in the first one, he was the embodiment of a spirit, that he was a supernatural, the crow. But yeah, you can capture him, you can kill him, you can drink his blood.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be basically a regular crow given powers.
Yeah, like that's his gig.
So weird. Yeah, but it really
also,
is.
Also, is this new for this movie that like he was like a voodoo doll crow? Like, if you hurt the flying crow, it hurt Ash.
Well,
that's new, right?
No, I mean, in the first one, they injure the crow and it does hurt Brandon Lee.
Oh, right. Okay. Cool.
He lost his powers briefly in the first one.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, then Ash sees a vision of his dead son, who explains to the audience that if he gives up, they can't be together. Judah shows up and starts kicking Ash's ass. Meanwhile, upstairs, the witch inexplicably frees Sarah. I was bad, but now I'm good. And gives her a knife.
Did we get an explanation why she was bad and then good?
No. Just...
No. I don't... So, in the beginning...
Was it the hat? She didn't have the hat when she was good.
This hat.
This hat was a bad choice.
Hats are
the audience will know by the hat.
It's classic language of cinema.
In the beginning, in her first scene, it made it seem like Judah was intimidating her. I don't know. You know, so he said, like, do you love me, Sybil? And she said, everybody must love you, Judah.
Yeah, she avoided that.
Ooh.
So
she should have been
named
Curve.
I can't tell with this hat on.
Hat. She's like, love is such a strong word.
This hat makes me evil. I'm incapable of love. Yeah.
Well, yes, I've grown quite fond of you over the years.
You're like, do we have to put labels on this thing?
We're just co-workers.
Aren't we having fun,
Aren't we
Judah?
We just work in the same sex office. Yeah. Aren't we wearing one?
Sorry, I got carried away. What with it being corn week and all.
She's like, aren't we having fun, Judah? Do we really have to ruin this by calling it something?
Yeah.
So please just take off your hat. It's corn week. Show me your face.
Take off your hat.
Hats off for corn week is going to be our new.
I want that shirt so bad.
That's gonna be our new logo.
I love it. It's corn week.
Hats off for corn week. Okay, so
it's corn week in LA.
Dude, it's corn week everywhere.
Yeah, I thought they celebrated it on the third Thursday.
Or is that Canada?
That's Canada.
Okay, so Sarah rushes downstairs as Judah monologues and hangs Ash from a lamppost. Then at this point, Judah begins whipping Ash and Sarah for the audience's amusement.
And the crowd's all for it. Yeah.
Yeah. This gang of middle-aged Dia de los Muertos goers are like, yeah, whip him.
Well, to be more accurate, if it is what we think it is, it's the Dia del Mays.
Yeah, wait, that's right. Does Corn Week run through October and November?
Corn Week is all week, motherfucker.
My birthday's on Day of the Dead, so that means that my birthday falls within Corn Week. That's great.
Oh,
that's
snap.
Exciting. I got another reason to celebrate.
With corn.
Going to Lake Havasu.
Gonna get a bunch of corn and go crazy with my buddies.
Gross.
I'll head up to the sex office. See Judah for the weekend.
I'll never that phrase.
So Sarah rushes.
All right, we're almost there. Yeah, what are they doing?
We're almost at the end of the movie. Come on, guys. Sarah rushes up and shoves a knife through Judah's forehead. She tends. So I mean, that's not easy to shove a knife through a skull. By the way.
Oh, that was a misery cord.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's what it's designed for.
It was sharp and thin.
So it can go through skulls easily under the breastplate.
Judah explained the misery cords earlier.
Oh. He's all, some people believe a knife can be used to kill.
To stab people.
Some people believe.
So, I use mine to stab birds.
They were
you can
knives
stab
were
people too.
To take
some people call knives. It a misery blade. I call
as
it a sling blade.
As a bird.
The bird's just for demonstration.
That's a demo bird. Don't worry.
He's selling those knives.
We won't use a real bird.
On an infomercial late at night. It cuts through a tomato. It cuts through a can. It cuts through a fucking bird.
Fucking knife, guys.
I can't find a knife that can stab a bird. There's got to be a better way.
Let me tell you about the misery cord.
Anyways. So Sarah tends to Ash, but Judah has crow powers now and pulls the knife out of his head and stabs Sarah with it.
No, he doesn't stab Sarah with it. Sarah throws herself onto the blade.
Okay.
Like she rushes forward and throws herself onto it, basically.
She's like, I've got to get out of this movie.
It's not a grenade, Sarah. It can still kill people after it kills you.
Right. You can only stab someone with a knife once. Then the knife is no
good. It's like the Young Lords and Meteor Man just throwing guns at people. So, single use.
Then at this point, Ash impales Judah on some nearby scaffolding. Which is weird because there's no construction going on in that area. And then Judah laughs, right, telling Ash that he has no power. Ash disagrees and calls down the murder of crows, which do a magic thing and take Judah away.
So when he calls them down, he screams, I swear he screams, take Mim, M-I-M. So he starts saying me, but then he ends with him. So it's like, take Mim.
So it's like when somebody asks you how you're doing and you say good.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, shit, I nearly fucked that up. Good thing they understood me.
Yep.
So Sarah dies. Sad clown takes her to the church. And then drives away on a motorcycle. And we see Ash and his son together in a garbage pond. Sarah? It is. Like, they're supposed to be, like, going off to the dead, but they're just walking through a puddle full of garbage.
Gray water.
Yeah. Sarah repeats her voiceover from the beginning, and the credits roll. Finn. So that was that. That's the movie. That is it.
Yeah. Like you said, the pacing is good. He gets right through it.
Yeah, they re-edited the fuck out of this thing to be like in, out, bang, boom, done. Yeah.
Sex office.
How many people here think that to get this role, Harvey Weinstein personally had to audition Mia Kirshner?
Honestly, I couldn't help but think that shit throughout this whole movie.
That's all I think of now. Yeah.
I hope for her sake not, but it's out there. Every movie he produced with a young female lead that was previously not very well known.
Right.
Well, and there were a number of women in this movie. I mean, this movie passed. Well, no, it didn't pass the Bechdel test. There were no women talking to each other.
No.
No.
Well, no. The little girl at the beginning.
The witch. The girl.
Well, were they talking?
The witch was talking about Judah, but the little girl, they were having a separate conversation.
They had a conversation about food. So technically that counts.
It does. And they both had names that we're aware of.
Wait, did the little girl have a name?
Wasn't it Grace?
Okay, yeah, I think so.
Anyway.
So, yeah. It was a movie that exists.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all I have to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's the worst one we've seen, but it's not great. I'll never need to see it again.
Oh, Lord, no.
So,
yeah, that's yeah, I don't really have a whole lot more opinion on this thing. It just is what it is.
Look cool. It was like a 90s music video that was an hour and a half long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I was expecting Trent Reznor to pop up at any moment.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, so that should be mentioned. The first soundtrack was fantastic. We talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
They did not carry that over. It was whoever they could get, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it was not the same. There were some good tracks, but
on the whole, it was a ton of like mid-90s proto new metal stuff going on.
Yeah.
Which was appropriate for the vibe of the movie, but wasn't especially interesting.
Good point.
The last soundtrack I think we discussed was they recorded all those songs specifically for the movie.
Yeah,
many of them. Yes,
this
and I don't get that from this. I don't think they did bother to do the same thing. They just grabbed a bunch of what was popular at the time.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, totally.
I think so.
So, we want to stick this thing on the list.
All right, so we've decided to kind of start at our middle standard. What is smack dab in the middle again?
Supergirl. Well, we have an even amount. Supergirl and Meteor Man represent the middle two.
Where is The Crow?
The Crow.
Oh, it's way high.
Yeah, The Crow, the first one is at number four.
Okay. Let's make this number five. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, I'm not that close.
I think it's better than Meteor Man, although Meteor Man was trying to do something. This wasn't really trying to do anything.
This is trying to make money.
So, I enjoyed this less than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Yeah, as did I. I feel it's Superman and the Mole Men is a weird thing to even be on the list compared to everything else. There's so much space between that and everything else, like as far as what it even is. But TMNT 3, I feel, was kind of similar in that it was a movie made to capitalize on the previous movie's popularity.
Yeah.
Below TMNT 3, we have Hero at Large.
I guess it was better than that because it knew what it wanted to do.
Yeah, and it just Hero at Large was also just not a very interesting film visually, whereas this at least had that going for it.
Yeah.
Do we want to
above
Turtles 3? Above here, do we want to put it somewhere?
Hero at Large.
Put it right above Hero at Large, below Turtles 3.
Which makes it what number?
That would make it number 21.
That sounds awesome.
That's fun.
So this was better than Batman Forever.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
And Howard the Duck.
Yes and no.
I think our fans agree.
There's some outcry concerning this development.
All right. So where didn't we say?
Do we want? Okay. So if we put it at 21, we're saying it's better than Batman Forever, Punisher, Howard the Duck, Toxie 2. I think Condor.
I like Toxie 2 better.
Yeah.
I like Howard the Duck better.
I like Ninja Turtles 3 better. I mean, I like that better than the second Turtles.
All right, so why don't we stick it below Toxie 2 above the Punisher? I think that feels pretty fair.
I feel good.
If I give you Toxie 2 and you get... No, I'm just kidding. That sounds fine. That's perfect.
All right.
Yeah.
That's it. So we'll put it at number 25.
25.
Okay, The Crow, City of Angels, going in at number 25 out of 30 3. This is the 33rd movie for this podcast we have watched. And I feel every single one of them. So that's it. We are calling it for the Crow City of Angels. Next week, gentlemen, we will be watching Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Oh, yeah.
NYPD. Yeah. Going back to Troma next week. Tromaville, here we come.
Yeah, boy.
Woo. So, yeah. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Vengeance Mime, Thoreau Smiley.
This is Josh CC, and fuck you, bird dick.
I'm Brian Lesh, and I'll be seeing you, sugar plums.
I'm Alaric Weber. My orders, never leave any witnesses.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Stay safe.
Harmless Phosphorescence was brought to you by executive producer Atticus Burkett, producers Michael Beckwith, Jojo Birchtree, Hedda Paulson, Kirsten Reed and Alyssa Dent, and Katie and Finn Thorpe. Make sure to rate and review us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Harmless Phosphorescence is a part of the Harmless Entertainment Network. Become a patron at patreon.com/harmlessentertainment. Thank you for listening.